All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Dr. Judith Simon Prager's work and book, The Worst Is Over, is hailed as a Bible for crisis communication. I've used it myself as a first person on the scene after a car accident. Prager's instructions gave me confidence to be of help to someone in pain and shock. She gives us concrete guidance of what to say when every moment counts. A former guest of New Dimensions, Dr. Larry Dossey, has this to say about her work. The Worst Is Over is a major contribution to healing and one of the most original books I have read in some time. At this moment in history, when many wish totally to give over to drugs, genome manipulation, and stem cells, we need this message more than ever that human consciousness and the ways we choose to communicate with one another can make a difference in life and death. So, dear listener, please join us as we explore the power of verbal first aid with our guest, Dr. Judith Simon Prager. Judith Simon Prager is a psychologist in private practice and is teaching in the UCLA Extension Writers Program. She has built a global reputation for work in verbal first aid, teaching first responders what to say so that traumatized people can begin to heal as soon as they hear the words. She designed the first pre, intra, and post-surgery guided imagery program, which was pilot tested to extremely positive results at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. She presents programs for school systems around the country, talking to kids about lockdown drills without scaring them. She's the author of What the Dolphin Said and co-author with Judith Acosta of The Worst Is Over, Verbal First Aid to Calm, Relieve Pain, Promote Healing, and Save Lives. I'm speaking with Dr. Prager at her home in Northern California by remote connection. This conversation is recorded in early April 2020, during the early stages of shelter in place because of the coronavirus pandemic. Join us for the next hours. We explore what to say and do when people are in fear, pain, and panic, and loneliness with our guest, Dr. Judith Simon Prager. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Judith, welcome.
Justine, it's really a pleasure to be with you again. We met earlier on another segment of this wonderful program when I introduced The Worst Is Over years and years ago. But we found that more and more, that whole idea of verbal first aid, the whole idea of what you say, of communication to people in times of fear, and pain and injury is so important. So what I originally planned to do at this moment was to do a little quick rewrite. I spoke to my co-author about it, a quick rewrite of Verbal First Aid, just a pamphlet on how to use it. But as I thought about it, the actual Verbal First Aid is about tending to an emergency, a physical, generally a physical emergency. We wrote it originally for first responders who find somebody broken up in the road, as you did, and knew what to say. And it makes all the difference in the world on how they heal and how they remember it. And I'm going to give you a wonderful example of that in a little while. But so I realized that it isn't verbal first aid so much that I'm talking about as communicating. How do we It's so important to know that our words and our tone of voice are especially important for how people deal with life in difficult times. And we are now in difficult times that may last for a very long time. You pointed out this was just the beginning of the pandemic, and we don't know how long it will last, but people are condemned to be in situations where they can't escape. And so what we need to help them do is find ways to talk to each other, to make it easier, more pleasant, more comfortable, to make them not be so frightened. The more that you read the news, the more frightened you get, of course. So, and we are a mind body. The whole idea of verbal first aid is that we are a mind body. So every thought that we have generates a physiological reaction. The example I always give is you wake up from a nightmare. And your palms are sweaty, and your heart is palpitating, and your throat is dry, and you open your eyes, and you're in your bedroom. And there's no stalker chasing you, no lion, nothing to escape. Do you roll over and go back to sleep? You do not. You sit up, you go to the bathroom, you have a drink of water, you check the locks on the doors, and then you go to your phone or your internet, and for 20 minutes, a cascade of chemicals is running through your body, changing the way you feel, getting you ready for fight or flight because something frightened you. But it was just an image. It was just a thought. So that's how large a thought can have an effect on your mind, body, and spirit. And when we talk to each other in a way that frightens each other, it changes our bodies too. And there's a 20-minute cascade of adrenaline and cortisol when you wake up from a nightmare. One of my favorite stories Deepak Chopra tells in one of his books, he talks about two people on a roller coaster. And the way I always do it is I say there's a middle-aged lady like me, or maybe even older like me, on a roller coaster. I don't know who talked me into being on here, but whoever it is, if I live through this experience, I will kill them because this is the scariest thing that ever happened. This belt is not going to hold me. Sitting right next to me is a 14-year-old boy on the very same seat. We're hip to hip. Maybe I like it. Maybe he doesn't. But in any event, we're sitting hip to hip. He's got his baseball cap on backward and his M&M t-shirt on. And he's looking 90 degrees straight down. Isn't straight down enough for him. He's exhilarated. He is so excited. Me in my fear, I'm making that adrenaline and cortisol. I'm harming my body. He in his exhilaration, as Deepak Chopra explains, is making interleukin-2, which they make in the research labs to help fight cancer. So he is helping himself. I'm harming myself. We're on exactly the same, having the exact same experience. And it is just our thought about whether we're harming ourselves or hurting ourselves, whether we're making the chemicals that help us be well or the opposite. So people who are locked up and can't go outside and are terrified to see their neighbors and are wearing masks and all the things that are happening during this pandemic, and we don't know how long it will go on, but at least at this time, and maybe even for some time to come, I hope not, those people are in fear. And being in fear allows them, here's another interesting thing about verbal first aid and what we talk about when we do. And that is that people who are in fear and shock and trauma go into an altered state of consciousness. I'm a hypnotherapist. And so I know about altered states of consciousness. And in such things, in such a state, almost everything you say is a suggestion to the unconscious mind. So when a EMT picking up somebody says, "Oh, buddy, did you break yourself up?" or "Don't move him, he might have broken his back and then he'll be crippled." Those are thoughts that lodge in the mind. They're suggestions. When a doctor says you have 6 months to live, they don't say that very much anymore. But they used to say you have 6 months to live, and then people would just set their watches and die on time because an authority figure is making a suggestion.
Oh, doctors and first responders generally used to say frightening things. And because the victim, the person who is frightened, the person who is in pain, is in an altered state, what an authority figure says to them is a suggestion. In fact, and this is not pertinent so much to being in a lockdown situation, but it's pertinent to the accident that you saw, any accident in which somebody's bleeding, unless it is major arterial or venous bleeding, you can say to someone, "Stop your bleeding and save your blood." And generally, they will. They will, because it's a suggestion to the unconscious mind, and the unconscious mind rules the blood flow. And so you can just, yes.
And so what that says is that what we imagine, we can imagine things. Our imagination is powerful, just as powerful as our physical, any physical part of our being.
You are so right. It is real to us. It's as real to us as reality. So if we say this, for example, even for a burn, if somebody gets burned, and this could happen in your home from boiling water, whatever, a burn, if it's under third degree burn and you get it within the first hour, you can say to somebody, "Imagine that packed in ice, cool and comfortable." Or imagine if you were out in the snow and you put it in a, you know, in a snowbank. And when you do that, it doesn't have to get edema, swelling. It doesn't have to scar. It heals so much faster and so much better. And it's because you've imagined it. And I have an interview with a doctor that I did that's on video. And his son was out skiing in the mountains in the winter and came back, and they were afraid that the sunburn would peel and hurt his face. So the father said, "Imagine your face cool and comfortable. Imagine packed in ice, blah, blah, blah." And the next morning, the sun came down and his face was perfectly fine, but his ears were bright red because they didn't include the idea of ears in that visualization. So the visualization, the thought actually manifests. Words are so powerful. Rudyard Kipling was famous for saying words are, of course, the most powerful drug known to, he said, mankind. We can say humankind. And they really are powerful. So they affect our body, and that's and our spirit.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you are pointing that out, and you have lots of analogies and stories to tell where people really have improved. They've calmed down. Their health has improved. And I want to really get into some of the things that we're going through right now, which is people are together in ways like, or not together. People are in isolation. There's loneliness. So I'd like to at some point cover what we can say to ourselves, because we're all by ourselves. And then also when we're in a household and we're together all the time with maybe a bunch of kids and so forth and so on. So we'll talk about that in a moment. I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Judith Prager, and she is the co-author with Judith Acosta of The Worst Is Over, Verbal First Aid to Calm, Relieve Pain, Promote Healing, and Save Lives. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, Judith Prager, PRAGER.com, judithprager.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Prager. She's a co-author with Judith Acosta of The Worst Is Over. And Judith, in this time, when we are doing this actual recording, I'm home alone in my apartment, and you are with, I think, your husband, I believe, or in your home. And we are sheltering in place. So help us understand how this verbal first aid can help us as we shelter in place.
Absolutely. And that's a really good question. There was a recent article in the Washington Post that was headlined, Human Connection Bolsters the Immune System. And the subhead was, that's why it's more important than ever to be kind. And it was all about how, especially if you're alone, they said a supportive phone call, an empathetic ear, an expression of love, these things can bolster the immune system on a molecular level. Whether you are the recipient or the giver, kindness is good for the health. I think it's really important for us to remember that we want to connect. Something else to say about whether you're alone or whether you're in this crazy condition. When 9/11 happened in New York, I interviewed a man named Leo Shea III, and he worked with trauma victims and it was very brilliant in that at the Rusk Institute at NYU, New York University Hospital. And he just said a sentence that was so important. He said, it's normal to feel crazy in the middle of a crazy situation, to be upset by something upsetting, to be frightened by something frightening. I think that's really important to know. There's nothing wrong with you if you're going, I hate this, or this is making me nuts. I mean, obviously, then you want to find ways to get around it. But the point is, there's nothing wrong with you thinking about that. This situation is crazy making. And acknowledging that at least allows you to say, all right, and so what am I going to do? And then you can start doing a lot of things. In fact, this is a little premature for me to say it, but you gave away my web page. I'm working with my web designer right now to come up with what I'm calling a toolkit for getting through this. And it's got all kinds of ways that we can help ourselves. It's got guided imagery, you know, that you can listen to calm you. It's got these things called psychosensory, which are the, I don't know if you've heard of the tapping and havening. There are different ways that you can calm your body. Calm your mind through your body, and you can learn those, and I'm going to put them up. And there are different ways you can work with your kids. I have a whole toolbox full of ways that I've got to figure out how to put up on a web page so that people can just click around and at no charge, just find for them what will keep them going at a time of whether they're alone or whether there's too much craziness and they can put the kids to watch some of this. And it's really important that we have the distractions and that we find ways of dealing. I have one thing that was in one of our other books. The other book was called Verbal First Aid, Help Your Kids Heal from Fear and Pain and Come Out Strong. And in that book, we have this little story of a little boy who's upset. And, you know, kids melt down, and especially in this, they're going to melt down because they need to get their energy out and jump up and down and all that. And they obviously, there's not enough room in some places for them to be doing it. So the mother said to the little boy, I can see that you're upset. Are you upset all over? And there's a truth that we can feel in our body where we feel anger. We can feel in our body where we feel love. We all, it's usually the heart. We can feel in the body where we feel our yes and no. We have a yes and no in our body. And when something is agreeable to us, to even on an unconscious level, our body responds that way. And when something is, we know we shouldn't. It's one of those things where I knew I shouldn't do it. I don't know why I did it. Well, your body was talking to you and you could feel it.
I can just imagine a mother asking a child, you know, to say, I see you're upset. Are you upset all over your body? And then you can play a game and you can touch their toe and say,
you've got it. That was brilliant of you to guess it. She says, the mother says, I can see you're upset. Are you upset all over? And the little kid, in being upset, said, yes, in your stomach. Yes. In your arms. Yes. In both of them. Yes. And both your legs too, of course. Yes. How about your shoulders? Yes. And your eyelashes? Yes, all of them. By that point, the kid is blinking and trying to figure out if he's upset in his eyelashes. Is there any part of you that isn't upset? A toenail, perhaps? Maybe one toenail. How would you feel if you put yourself there and looked at all the other parts from your toenail? And it's just a question of, you know, if you would just, instead of being upset with the kid, if you would find a way, as you were suggesting, of make it a game, make it a way that we can interact and honor. You know, the most important thing in what I train is listening. Listening is the key to everything. Everyone wants to be heard. Justine, I can't even explain it. When I'm in therapy with someone, and I had this happen one day. This lady was just there going through her usual complaints about, I don't know, her mother or whatever, but it was nothing specific. And all of a sudden she started crying. And I said to her, "What's going on?" And she said, "You're really listening." And I thought to myself, first of all, you pay me to do that. That's my job. But second of all, I thought to myself, I mean, it just breaks my heart that people aren't accustomed to being heard. And it's partly because we think we're so great multitasking, you know? So we're on the phone and we're on our computer and we're eating lunch and we're waving to someone. And so anyone knows that you're only getting a quarter of the attention of the person you're talking to. And that is so dismissive. So when you stop everything and you just listen, and one of the techniques of verbal first aid is to repeat back. So the kid says, you know, "I banged my knee." "Oh, your knee. Tell me." "And well, I banged it against the table." "Oh, you banged it against the table. Which table? I want to talk to that table." But in any event, however you decide to do it, what you're saying is, "I hear you." It is so incredibly important to say that "I hear you." Other magic words, which are similar to that in verbal first aid, is "I'm right here." I remember, you may recall, it's a long time ago, but there was a congresswoman named Gabrielle Giffords, and she was giving a talk in Arizona, and some crazy person came up and shot her in the head, and she fell down, and she had an assistant who had only worked for her a couple weeks. He knew nothing about first aid. Somebody called 911, but she's sitting there with a bullet in her head, bleeding, and he's sitting next to her holding her hand, and he wouldn't let go. And things kept going on and whatever, and he held her hand. And I have a picture of her being carried on the stretcher to the ambulance where they're going to take her to the hospital. And this guy is holding her hand as she's still on the stretcher. He wouldn't let go. And he said, "I wanted her to know that there was somebody there." And, you know, she healed quite well. She's out campaigning now for gun control, and she's just an amazing person. But I feel like what saved her was not what happens when you think, "I'm all alone, I've been shot in the head, I don't know what to do, my life is over, I don't know how to fix myself." What kind of chemicals are going through your body then? But if somebody else says, even simply, "I'm right here," all of a sudden, it's not your job to fix yourself anymore. Somebody else knows. So it just allows you to begin to go from the sympathetic nervous system, which is the nervous system that's scanning the world for all the things that are scary, to the parasympathetic nervous system, which allows us to rest and digest and to heal. So the idea of just saying, "I'm right here," or "I hear you," is a way of saying, "You're not alone in this. I'm right with you." And even if the kid has known that he's not alone, because he's in a house full of people, still, when he bumps his knee, he wants your undivided attention. Not that's, "Oh, that's too bad, honey. I have to go finish dinner." "No, tell me about it. Let me hear." Because, you know, if the child is really heard, he's not going to bother you so much later on in the day.
So in that, what you're talking about is that in our society, we go so quickly to trying to fix something and right. To say, "Oh, you're going to be okay," or I'll kiss your wound or whatever. But you're saying the first thing is to acknowledge what they're going through and not to negate it. Is that what you're saying? Not to dismiss it.
You did it beautifully. Yes. When you dismiss somebody, when you know what happens to a lot of times a father will do this to a boy because he wants him to be brave. Oh, you're all right. The kid may have fallen out of a tree and broken his arm, but for the father to say you're all right says to the kid, either I dismiss it or you should dismiss yourself. And so it's so much better for the future of the child to feel that what happens to him matters and he can pay attention to it, and then we can take care of it. I'll tell you this wonderful story, one of my favorite. I have so many and I love them, but there's one story of a Northern California firefighter received the copy of The Worst Is Over from his mother. And he said, you know, I should have read it right away because my mother's always right. She introduced me to my wife and she was smart about that. So I should have paid attention to her. But anyway, I read it last night. I spoke to him on the phone. He said, I read part of it last night because I couldn't sleep. And the next day I was called to a car crash. And there was a mother and a six-year-old daughter in the car. And it wasn't a tragedy. They were banged up, but they were all right. They were going to be fine. But the mother, we were able to retrieve her because the child was on the side of the car that was impacted and we couldn't open her door. So she is crying hysterically because she's frightened and her mother is already out of the car. And he said, I came over and ordinarily I would have been yelling, get the jaws of life. That's what they call it when they pry the car open. But he said, instead, I remembered verbal first aid. I reached in and touched her knee and she's crying. And I said, I'm a daddy like your daddy, and I have a little girl just like you, and I'm going to take care of you as if you were my little girl. Justine, everything became quiet. He couldn't believe it. She sat patiently while they got her out, and he said, oh, verbal first aid is wonderful. I said, you don't even know how wonderful it is. Yes, it affected her so she could heal right on the spot and feel fine, but it affected the way that she thinks about it forever. Because she doesn't think of this as the worst thing that ever happened to her, a catastrophe, a frightening experience. That's a trauma. She doesn't think of it that way. She thinks of it now as a time of rescue and maybe even a time of her own courage. And what did it take? Two sentences? And it made all that difference in her life. And that's why I'm saying, even in this confinement, when people are locked in houses with each other, they should speak to each other in a way that doesn't cause trauma in the long run. It's especially true for kids because this is their childhood that they're going through. If this is going to be 18 months or whatever they're saying, 2 years, that's 2 years between 4 and 5 or between 2 and 3 or between, you know, even between 14 and 16 when they're really into their wanting to be independent and everything else and they're stuck at home with mom and dad. So this is a really hard time, and not to be, of course, you can't be perfect all the time, but you have to do the best you can. And we'll talk about
that. I'm here with Dr. Judith Prager. She's the co-author with Judith Acosta of The Worst Is Over, Verbal First Aid to Calm, Relieve Pain, Promote Healing, and Save Lives. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Prager, co-author of The Worst Is Over. We're talking about specifically about how at this time, really specifically for children sheltering in place, this is a particularly important time in their formation of all their memory circuits of what's going to happen at this time. So what is